Those who have been attending my ministry for some time will know that every year at this time, I preach what is commonly referred to as a motto text, a watchword for the 12 months that lie before us in the will of God. And we always add that because none of us knows what a day may bring forth. We don't know that we're going to live another year or even another day. But if the Lord keeps us alive, keeps us upon this earth, then I believe that it's good for us to have a watchword for that time to come in the will of God. And so this morning, I want to bring a simple word of encouragement and exhortation for 2019. It's found in the words of Galatians chapter 6, verse 9. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. Interestingly, the context of this verse is a discussion of Christian liberality in giving to the work of God. It may surprise some folks to learn that the inexorable law of sowing and reaping spoken of by Paul is given in the context of the giving of our means, of our finances, to the Lord's work, and in the context of Christian charity. I'll show you this as we read from verse 6. Let him that is taught in the word, that's the congregation, communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. And obviously, it can be looked upon as a self-serving thing for a pastor to talk about pastoral support. But that's what Paul is referring to here. And I'm certainly thankful for a congregation that helps me to be able to give myself to the work of the ministry full time. The Lord has enabled me all of these years not to be bivocational, but to give myself to the labor of the word and doctrine. And I praise God for a congregation that is faithful in that regard. But notice the next verse. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. He's still talking about the same subject. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we have, therefore, opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith. It's still a discussion of giving of our means to support the work of God and to be charitable to other believers who are in need. But I want to speak upon this specific text, verse 9, in a more general way. I read a story of a certain lady who came to a prominent preacher in the city of London, England, seeking for his help. She was quite anxious about her soul. She was afraid in particular about the fact that if she trusted in the Lord Jesus Christ for salvation, she might not be able to continue to live a Christian life. She was fearful, as many often are, of falling back and falling away from Christ, not having the strength in herself to go on with God. And we've heard people like that through the years say something like this: I'm afraid I couldn't keep it. And the reality is, you don't keep it anyway. You're kept by the power of God. But this woman was fearful. And the preacher gave her a simple illustration to encourage her heart. He said, "Dear, there was once a pendulum inside an old grandfather clock. And that pendulum figured out somehow the number of times that it would need to swing back and forth in the future and keep time. And because of this, the clock became very discouraged and was about to give up ticking and talking. But then the clock thought to itself, well, after all, it is only one tick at a time. And so it decided to continue on, and the pendulum kept swinging back and forth And the preacher told this anxious lady, that's just like the Christian life. It is but one step at a time. It is but one day at a time. We know that many of God's people can suffer from discouragement like that betimes and feel just like giving up and giving in. But here, at the beginning of another year, there's a great word to encourage such to press on and to keep going in the Christian life and in Christian service. Let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. And may this be a word that the Lord writes upon each one of our hearts this morning for the upcoming year in His will. Notice the following things. Here is a powerful challenge. And let us not be weary in well-doing. Now, the fact that we have to be exhorted in this way suggests that it is a real temptation for believers to give up and to actually become weary in well-doing. We've all read and heard of, no doubt, the prophet Elijah. Back in the Old Testament, in 1 Kings chapter 19, we read about that occasion on which Elijah became very discouraged. He suffered a tremendous bout of discouragement, and it was because of the threats of the wicked Jezebel. We read about it in 1 Kings 19 from verse 1. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done, and withal how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, so let the gods do to me and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. And when he saw that, he arose and went for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongeth to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a juniper tree. And he requested for himself that he might die and said, it is enough. Now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am not better than my fathers. So here we find this man having what I would call a juniper tree experience. He felt that he couldn't go on. He couldn't go any further. It is somewhat amusing, though, to read this passage, because when he's asking the Lord to take away his life, if you think about it, if it had just stayed where he was, his prayer would have been answered. Because that's what Jezebel was going to do. She was going to kill him. So if he wanted to really die, he should have stayed where he was. I don't really think Elijah really wanted to die. But that's what he articulated. And let me say this, there are people who become so discouraged that they do want to die. And that's a very sad phenomenon in our society, suicide, where people just feel that they just can't go on, that they're a burden to everybody else, and they just want to end it all and finish it all. And if they're not saved, they don't realize that their suffering would only just be beginning. Because suicide is murder, self-murder. But when you get to that sort of point, and Christians in every generation can be taken by the juniper tree syndrome, what do you do? We might say that Elijah was not so much weary of the work of God as he was weary in the work of God. And I'm quite convinced that there was a physical aspect to this. But think about this yourself. Do you ever feel like giving up? Do you ever feel like you just can't go on anymore? You can't go any further? Well, God would challenge you. He would challenge his people generally not to become weary in well-doing. But the reason that he challenges us about that is that it's a very real possibility and it is a very genuine temptation. Weariness and discouragement have been felt by many throughout the history of the Christian church. And I've read enough life stories of missionaries and ministers, men and women of God, biographies and sometimes autobiographies, to know that this is a very real problem, potentially, for the strongest of Christians. We just feel weary in well-doing. If you think about this, weariness is usually caused by certain things or by certain conditions, even in a physical sense. And as we've indicated in Elijah's case, there was a very real physical aspect to his spiritual discouragement. Frankly, he needed to rest. He needed to sleep. He needed to have a good meal that the angel presented to him. And most of all, he needed to hear the still, small voice of God. But we know that physical tiredness, weariness of body, can sometimes have underlying causes. For example, let me just say this. Weariness can be the result of certain eating habits. I know there's a lot out there about nutrition and what you should eat and not eat and so on. Sometimes when I read some of that, I think, well, I'm left to eat a piece of grass and drink water. It seems like everything's bad for you, depending on who's speaking or who's writing. But there's no doubt we may eat the wrong things, and we may even eat at the wrong times. And it affects us physically. I do think it's strange, you know, that they tell you that you shouldn't eat late at night, and yet we open the refrigerator, there's a light in there to show you where the food is. I never could figure that out. But think about the foods we consume. Think about that. It's a proven fact that certain types of food are not conducive to providing or sustaining energy in the body. I'm not an expert on these things, but I know there are many who are, and they'll tell you that certain fatty foods and sugary things and so on can actually be the cause of listlessness and a lack of energy. What we put into our bodies will often affect how we feel physically. As well as the foods we consume, there's also the frequency of consumption. There's a problem. How often we eat, how much we eat, will affect us physically. We eat the wrong things, and we eat the wrong amounts, and we get bigger. I know. I know I do. I battle my weight all the time. It has a very tangible effect upon us physically. We get tired and weary because we're not eating correctly. Someone said we are what we eat. I must be a hamburger. We are what we eat. I think that's true. And physical weariness can undoubtedly be caused by feeding on the wrong things. And this has a real application to our spiritual lives. We can become malnourished spiritually. Our diet spiritually needs to be right. What kind of things are we feeding upon from day to day? There are sources of so-called food in this world for our minds and our souls that are positively injurious to spiritual health. What table are you feeding at from day to day? We read in the Word of God that it compares itself to milk. The sincere milk of the Word. Desire the sincere milk of the Word that you may grow thereby. That's what the baby does. It desires the milk. It wants to feed. And then the Word of God compares itself to strong meat. And we do, when we grow physically, graduate. And we make progress from the milk to the meat. And we do that as well in our Christian experience. Christ is the bread of life. Are we feasting upon the living bread? Are we drinking from the fountain of the pure water of life? We are what we eat spiritually. What kind of regular eating habits have you established spiritually in your life? And I would say at the beginning of this year, get yourself, if you haven't already, a good Bible reading plan. Stick to it. Read the Word daily. Let it feed your soul. And pray to the Lord daily. Someone said 7 days without prayer makes 1 week. Not W-E-E-K, but W-E-A-K. We need to be daily in the Word. But as well as our eating habits, I think there's also weariness that can be the direct result of certain exercise habits. Weariness physically can be caused, maybe not so much by exercise habits or as so much, we could say, the lack of such habits. And I know this is also true. I'm in trouble when I stop exercising. Now, I can say this because I feel like it's me. But I heard of an overweight gentleman who was challenged by his doctor about losing some pounds for his health. And the man made the excuse, "Well, doctor, being overweight is a problem that runs in my family." And the doctor replied, "Actually, sir, the real problem is that no one runs in your family." You think this has not got a spiritual application? It certainly does. Look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9. The Apostle Paul here is speaking, and he says from verse 24, "Know ye not that they which run in a race run all," that means everybody's running, "but one receiveth the prize, so run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things." That means he's self-controlled. And you know that that's true when you think about Olympic athletes, for example. They have a special nutritionist. They have personal trainers. They eat the right things. They drink the right things. They take on board vitamins and all of that. They're self-controlled in all things. "Now they do it," he says, "to obtain a corruptible crown." Those in the Greek games used to be crowned with a wreath of laurel leaves that would eventually fade and wither. Nowadays it's a gold medal. He said, "But we an incorruptible crown." And listen to this. "I therefore so run, not as uncertainly, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." The word means disavowed. You could say set on the shelf. Running. This is spiritual exercise. If you're feeling weary and well-doing, men and women, maybe this is what you need. More spiritual exercise. We need to put graces into exercise. Remember what Paul wrote to Timothy. In 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 7 and verse 8. "Refuse profane and old wives' fables and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. For bodily exercise profiteth little." That doesn't mean it's not of any value, because the margin tells you that what it really means. It means for a little time. Bodily exercise does profit, but it's only for a little time. "But godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come." Spiritual exercise. He writes to the Hebrews in Hebrews 12 verse 1. "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses," there's the people in the amphitheater, there's the people in the auditorium, "let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith." Let us run with patience the race. Oh, may God enable us to be diligent in running after holiness of life. It's interesting that in Hebrews 12, further down in verse 14, he says, "Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord." The word "follow" there literally means pursue. Pursue diligently peace with all men and holiness. Run after holiness. Seek after holiness. Exercise yourself after holiness. All for the right exercise habits in our Christian lives. So there's a powerful challenge. Let us not be weary. But there's also a particular charge in well doing. This is what we're called to as God's people, even in this church. Well doing, or doing well. Each of us has a work to do for the Lord. Are we doing it? Are you involved in that which could properly be described as well doing? Peter referred to that in 1 Peter 2 and verse 15. "For so is the will of God, that with well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men." See how your deeds can have an effect upon people. Putting to silence those that would oppose the gospel and those who preach it with well doing. This is what we're called to. Doing well. It refers to practical Christian living generally. And that's what God has called you to and me. To live well before men. You know, there are those who, they often say, talk a good game. They're not so good when it comes to the game itself. There are Christians who are good at talking about Christianity and good at talking about the Bible, but not so good at living it. And yet the Bible, over and over again, emphasizes this aspect. Think of the words of Paul to the Ephesians. 3 times in chapter 5 of Ephesians, he talks about walking. Verse 2, walk in love, as Christ also hath loved us. In verse 8, you were sometimes darkness, but now ye light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. Verse 15, see then that ye walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Walking circumspectly means carefully picking your steps as you go. This is how we're to be. Well doing. Yes, we have a duty to be witnesses for the Lord, and that involves both witness by life and by lip. In Isaiah 43:10, the Lord said, ye are my witnesses, saith the Lord, that I am God. And the Lord Jesus, with the same thought in Acts chapter 1, told the disciples, ye shall be witnesses unto me. But I feel it's particularly vital to stress the need for Christian living, since it is by your life that the opportunities to speak are created. See, sometimes there are people who profess the Lord's name and their lives close their lips. They're not able to witness to others because they know they're going to be considered right away a hypocrite. Now we need to do something about that. Didn't Jesus say, Matthew 5 verse 16, let your light so shine before men that they may hear your words? No. That they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. Are we to speak words? Yes. But is it not interesting that the Lord said that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven? Is my life speaking for Christ? The Bible does refer here in our text to well-doing and not just well-speaking. Because our actions speak. And we're reminded by James in his epistle that we are to be doers of the word and not hearers only. I've known plenty of people in my lifetime who had the right words to speak sometimes. And they were able even to quote copiously from Scripture, but without a holy life to back it up. The evangelist D.L. Moody once said, the preaching that this world needs most is the sermons in shoes that are walking with Jesus Christ. There's a children's song to that effect, isn't there? Do you know, O Christian, you're a sermon in shoes? So walk it and talk it and preach it and teach it. A sermon in shoes. Is that what I am? Is that what I'm seeking to be? Look at the words of Paul to the Corinthians. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, the first 3 verses. Do we begin again to commend ourselves, or need we, as some others, epistles of commendation to you, or letters of commendation from you? Ye are our epistle written in our hearts, known and read of all men. For as much as ye are manifestly declared to be the epistle of Christ, ministered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not in tables of stone, but in fleshy tables of the heart. Think about those words in verse 2. An epistle, a letter, known and read of all men. It is a truism that the only Bible that some people will read regularly is your life and mine. I wonder what version we're presenting. Is it a perversion? Oh, we're to be living letters. Be not weary in well doing. What is my life actually saying to the lost that are all around me? Do they notice any difference? Oh, may God enable us furthermore, not merely to be involved in well-thinking or in well-wishing, and not merely to be well-meaning, but well-doing. Let us not be weary in doing what is right before God and before men. That's the particular charge, well-doing. And then there's a precious comfort. Be not weary in well-doing, for, because, in due season we shall reap. Those are words that every farmer loves to hear. We're going to have a harvest this year. We shall reap. And there is an important law aforementioned, referenced by the apostle in Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8. Look at it. Be not deceived. And this is a general word that we can give even to the lost. Don't be deceived. Don't deceive yourself. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Whatever way you sow, that's how you're going to reap. That's how it works. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. Don't you expect to be sowing to the flesh all week and then trying to reap spiritually on the Lord's day? It doesn't work that way. Sunday Christians are not Christians. We are to be sowing constantly to the Spirit. But this is a law, an inexorable law, an inflexible law of harvest, sowing and reaping. I've discovered this. What I put in the ground in springtime is what I can expect to reap from in the harvest time. I can't expect to be reaping carrots where I've sowed potatoes. And you can use any analogy like that to prove what I'm saying. You can't sow one kind of seed and expect to be reaping something different in the harvest. For example, you can't expect to sow prayerlessness and then reap benefit and blessing. It doesn't work that way. And if we're involved in a sowing ministry of well-doing this year, there will be a good result from that. We shall reap. I can't tell you when. I can't tell you that you will reap the day after you sow. That's not how it works. But this is a sure promise. Note the word, shall reap. I think there's an application here that's at least twofold. There's an application to supplication. Prayer is sowing work. As we sow in secret, we will reap in a public way. Matthew 6, verse 6 tells us that. You enter into your closet, you pray to your Father in secret. Your Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly, publicly. There will be answers to prayer. And we may apply this great promise also to soul winning. Look at the words of Psalm 126. What tremendous words of promise these are. The last two verses, Psalm 126, 5 and 6. They that sow in tears shall reap in joy. Certainly there's an application there to prayer. Maybe you're weeping in secret for some person that you love that's not saved. Keep on sowing in tears. You will reap in joy. And then it says, he that goeth forth and weepeth, bearing precious seed. The word actually is a seed basket. The idea is of the sower going forth to sow his seed, as they did in those days. Shall what? Doubtless come again with rejoicing, bringing his sheaves with him. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves, the hymn says. It will happen. The Lord will make it happen. And that work, you'll notice, it's carried on in the spirit of prayer. He that goeth forth and weepeth. The reaping from such sowing is sure and it's certain. Doubtless, a reaping's going to come if we're active in sowing the seed. Now, I know oftentimes a lot of sowing is done. And believers, even the servants of God in the ministry and on the mission fields, feel that there's not a lot of reaping that is visible. When William Carey went to India, when he was there with Marshman and Ward, they sent back prayer letters on a regular basis and nothing was happening that they could see. Carey had been in India over 7 years without seeing one single convert. But read about what happened in the intervening years leading up to when he died. The blessing that God gave. Marvelous things were done. We have to press on, men and women, pleading the promises of God. His word will not return unto him void. I may have told you this before. It bears repetition. There was a man that I knew well in my childhood called Jimmy Crooks. He was an elder in my childhood church in Mount Marion. A church that I later went back to be the pastor. What about that? But I was dedicated as a baby in that church by S.B. Cook. Anyway, Jimmy Crooks had a grocery business. He used to go around the neighborhood there, around Mount Marion, and he would witness for the Lord as he went, when he got opportunity. He was involved in the Sunday school and young people's work. He was faithful. He was diligent. He was an old man at the time when we had the 50th anniversary of the denomination. It was a big celebration in Belfast. They hired a huge auditorium that held over 10,000 people, and it was full. And Jimmy was there. He met my parents that same evening after the meetings were over, and he was in tears. They thought it was because he was so overcome by this meeting and all these people and the wonderful preaching, but it wasn't. He told my parents he'd been walking through the parking lot of that big auditorium, and two grown women, probably by that time in their 40s, met him. And they greeted him, Mr. Crooks. He didn't know who they were. The two ladies had been in the Sunday school in the Mount Marion congregation. They said to Mr. Crooks that day, I don't know if you ever knew this, Mr. Crooks, but we both, sisters, came to Christ while we're in Sunday school in Mount Marion. Jimmy began to weep. He said to my parents, that was the greatest blessing of today for me. Those were great meetings, great preaching, great singing. What a wonderful day. But I would trade all of that for what happened in the parking lot. That was such an encouragement to my heart, because sometimes in the work of the children's work, you feel like nothing is being done. And once in a while, the Lord reminds you, we shall reap if we faint not. You see, the Lord is the one who gives the increase. And there are things that God will do through your faithful prayers and witness that you know nothing about. Couldn't Paul talk about that? He said, I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. And in that same passage, he talked about the fact that we are laborers together with God. Neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God that giveth the increase. But look at this. Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one. And every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. There's the reaping according to the sowing. Oh yes, there is here a precious comfort. We shall reap. There's also a precise confidence, because that reaping is in due season. In due season. God does everything at the good and proper time, in accordance with his eternal purpose. He's never too early. He's never too late. He's just in due season. Because you see, God's timetable is not like ours. It's perfect. And what God will do is right on schedule. I'm afraid that some people in God's work seem to want all the reaping to be done right away, immediately after they planted the seed. I remember once going with a young man from our church in Rutherglen to give out tracts. And we gave out over 600 of them. I remember him saying to me, oh, there'll be people coming in tomorrow to church. Probably my faithlessness, but I think also a little bit of experience came into play. And I never said anything to him. But I thought, yes, the Lord could fill the place up tomorrow, and I pray that he will. But I can tell you, not one person, not one, came into church the following day or the week after that. But was that a waste of time? No, it wasn't a waste of time, because the word was sown. We can't expect that when we plant a seed that there's going to be a reaping right away. You've heard of the little boy who took a daffodil bulb and took it down to the bottom of the yard and planted it. And he started complaining to his mother for weeks and weeks afterwards that the daffodil wasn't growing. And she wondered why that was, and she went down there and found that he was digging it up every day to see if it was growing. It's not going to happen. But that's what we do. Instead of waiting for God's time in all things, there is a time. There is a time. God tells us that in his word. Even in Ecclesiastes, it talks about that very thing, doesn't it? About God's purpose. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse number 1. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven. Verse 2 says, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. There's such a thing as waiting upon God and waiting for God. May the Lord teach us patience, even in the matter of our praying. There's a due season when answers are given by God. The husbandman has to wait, James tells us, with long patience for the coming of the Lord. And it's my view there that the coming of the Lord in view is the Lord coming in judgment to avenge those poor believers who were oppressed by the rich employers. Strictly speaking, that's what's in view. And there is a time when the Lord comes to answer our prayers. A precise confidence. And finally, there is a provided condition. Here's the kicker. If we faint not. Oh, there's the problem. Herein lies the difficulty. We are prone to fainting. C.H. Spurgeon wrote a famous piece entitled The Minister's Fainting Fits. I've read it. It was somewhat biographical, I think. Every preacher can identify with that. But it's not just preachers who faint. Oh no. Not just preachers who faint. Every child of God needs the help of the Lord that they might be granted the determination to press on and to press through. To keep on keeping on. You see, it's a great temptation to be a fainter, a quitter in the Lord's work. And it is particularly a temptation, let me say, in the day of small things. The devil discourages us. Our own flesh discourages us. I read where one man said we should talk to ourselves more and listen to ourselves less. We need to talk to ourselves in the words of God instead of listening to the voice of doubt that comes from within us. Oh, the devil discourages, the flesh discourages, and furthermore, other believers discourage us. I once had a malady, and a dear lady I visited, she said to me, oh, you know, you never get over that. You never get better from that. I remember thinking, thank you very much. That was so encouraging. There are believers like that. They seem to love to be bearers of bad tidings. Listen, we're called to keep going. We have to press on in the well-doing of prayer in 2019. Let the prayer meetings here be well attended. Oh yes, there'll be plenty of times when you'll not feel like coming to the prayer meeting. How do you know? Because I feel that way. Plenty of times. Plenty of times when you'll, it's a cold night, it's a wet night, I think I'll just stay in. That's the voice that you'll hear. Let the prayer meetings be well attended. Let us not give up on seeking God for all that we need. Men ought always to pray and not to faint. Luke chapter 18 verse 1. That word literally means cave in. Men ought always to pray and not to cave in. Remember what Isaiah said in chapter 40 of his book? Right there in verse 29, he giveth power to the faint, and to them that have no might he increaseth strength. When you feel like fainting, the Lord's able to give you power. Why? Because verse 30, even the youths shall faint and be weary. You see these young fellows running about. They could run all day. Some of them, they're just fit specimens. They're amazing. They just keep running like the Energizer Bunny. But listen, even the youths shall faint and be weary. Those that you wouldn't expect to be faint. And the young men shall utterly fall. But they that wait upon the Lord shall renew their strength. The word literally means they will change strength. They'll exchange their weakness for the Lord's strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. And listen, and they shall walk and not faint. Oh, we will not faint as we keep before God in prayer. But we must also press on in the well-doing of proclamation in 2019. Keep on preaching the word. When my dear dad was lying on a gurney in a hospital down in Newark, Delaware, his life was in the balance. Ultimately, the Lord preserved him, but we didn't know it at the time. The doctor, when he did the surgery on him, said when he opened him up, he would have put his chances of survival at less, considerably less than 10%. As he's lying there in that gurney and we're saying goodbye to him because he's going in for a major surgery, my dad looked to me and he said, "Son, preach the word. Preach the word." That was going to be his parting shot. Preach the word. And I don't forget that because right here in my pulpit I keep this calligraphy that was done by my sister. Preach the word. Preach the word. That's what we're to do. And as I preach the word, you pray for me. And you go out into the community and preach the word. As ye go, preach. Ask the Lord to make you a witness. You say, "Brother, it's really hard for me to speak for the Lord." I know it is. It's hard for me too. Not so much here, but out in the community. And especially among your loved ones. That's so difficult. But may we ask the Lord to help us, to give us power. If we faint not, may the Lord help us not to cave in. May the Lord help us to be strong in the Lord and in the power of His might. One word to finish. Proverbs 24 verse 10. If thou faint in the day of adversity, thy strength is small. May God help us not to be fainters, not to be quitters. But let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap, if we faint not. What a word for the year ahead. May God write it upon our hearts.